Eugene Yvonne is an internationally renowned food and science writer who is an expert on mushrooms. Her work has appeared in numerous anthologies, magazines, and newspapers, including the New York Times, the National Lampoon, Saveur, Gourmet, BBC Science, and the Wall Street Journal, where she is also a frequent book reviewer. Eugenie is a member of the faculty of the New York Botanical Garden, where she teaches classes on mycophagy and psychedelic mushrooms. She's also a master chef whose cookbook, Well Preserved, for one example, was nominated for a James Beard Award. In addition to her staple, Mycophilia, Eugenie's latest book is Have a Good Trip, which was published in October 2024. The latter is not a guide. Rather, Have a Good Trip is a resource that addresses all the questions the mushroom curious might have. At the Telluride Mushroom Festival, Eugenie Yvonne is featured every single day of the long weekend. This is Susan B. Brock, Telluride Inside and Out, delighted to be talking once again with Eugenie Yvonne. Eugenie, thanks for taking time out of your schedule to join me.
Hi, Susan. I'm glad to be speaking with you again.
Great. So let's start with the Telluride Mushroom Festival 2025. When and how did your relationship with one of the oldest mycologically focused happenings in the world evolve? And what draws you back year after year?
Year after year is the case. I just keep coming back. I love it so much. It started for me when I first became obsessed with mushrooms and I attended forays and festivals all over the country out of curiosity and out of an interest in building my knowledge as an amateur mycologist, and also just socializing. I kind of fell hard for the mushroom crowd, for their quirky intellectualism and surprising candor, their love of the outdoors, all of that. And the Telluride Mushroom Festival was always a special event that I love to attend because for two reasons. One is I have a farm in Crawford, Colorado, which is only a couple of hours north of Telluride. So, and I'm there in the summer, so it's always been easy for me to attend. And the other reason why I have fallen in love with it, or I was so particularly interested in it, is that in all my years of attending mushroom forays and festivals for a long time, you would never hear anything about psychedelic mushrooms, particularly psilocybin, the species in the psilocybin genus. And it was like it's like magic mushrooms were sort of the black sheep of the mycology world. But the Telluride Mushroom Festival very much embraced whatever was current in thinking and knowledge about these amazing mushrooms. And so it had a special place in my heart because of its unique courage to talk about the psilocybin species. So those two factors, proximity and courage, is really what characterized my ongoing participation. But then, after publishing Mycophilia, I started to be asked to do various talks because my research, curiosity is destiny, and I fall down these rabbit holes. And so I've done all kinds of research into different aspects of mycology and microbiology because, frankly, mycology is like the gateway drug to microbiology. And the festival has been kind enough to stay apprised of my research and writings and have invited me over and over again to contribute, sometimes as a chef, sometimes reporting on my new research, sometimes both. But that has, those invitations have kept me going. And by and large, I've participated really in any way the festival asked me to, because I think it's a really special event, and I'm not doing it to make money. I make my money selling books, not hobnobbing with fellow amateur mycophiles and sharing my research.
Okay, thank you for that. Your first event at this year's festival is a variation on the theme of the Telluride Institute's very popular Talking Gourds poetry program. What should attendees expect to take away from the edition that's titled Michael Gord's A Psychedelic Elder's Sharing?
You know, I have really no friggin' idea. I've never participated in a Michael Gord, but Art Goodtimes, who's the host, and I have been colleagues and friends for a long time now. And of late, we have been sharing our insights into the maturing process and how it changes your view, how it allows for certain things but inhibits others. And as a writer, I feel like I hope I can share and learn from other writers what it's like to mature into your field. I'd also hope that we can talk about how seniors and psychedelics interact, because it is different and has potential different possibilities, opportunities, mm-hmm. And in some cases, maybe slightly different potential harms. So I'd like to look at all that. But on the other hand, as I said, I've never done a Michael Gord before, and I tend to be pretty good on my feet. So I'm hoping that whatever evolves, I will be, a useful participant of.
Oh, I have no doubt about that. So on to something else you'll be addressing at this year's festival. It seems to me that some of the enthusiasm on display last year around legalizing psychedelics has waned. Or does that feel Sisyphean in the context of the current socio-political environment? Do you sense what I'm saying is true? And if yes, what are the ramifications?
Do I sense what? That this is true?
Yeah,
well, I do, Susan. I really do. There was this huge, massive enthusiasm that happened as the kind of mainstream media, including the wonderful author Michael Pollan, publicized these very interesting and very promising academic studies. Right. So there's a difference between academic studies and commercial studies, like what the FDA mm-hmm. regulates. And mm-hmm. those academic studies got a lot of people really excited and optimistic about the possibility for therapeutic cures or treatments for an array of mm-hmm. disabilities and diseases that people deal with but don't really have, and some of which who don't have adequate cure or therapy for. So that was really building, and everybody was thinking for sure, it was going to break, and Lykos, for example, was going to get its approval from the FDA for its MDMA drug for veterans mm-hmm. Who suffer from PTSD, but then the kind of bottom fell out. And I think that was a result of the kind of rubber hitting the road. The FDA regulatory system, which does not suppress, in my view, psychedelic therapy, but has it's a consumer protection organization, and so they mm-hmm. have pretty rigorous standards. And psychedelics is a hard drug to fit into a regulatory system that is built to regulate, antacids and statins and stuff like that, chronic drugs. Drugs that you use chronically, right, all the time.
Yes.
And so that was like a big disappointment. And then there were other, reports of harms, which had been, I think, probably unintentionally avoided or not reported. So whenever you have a lot more people interested in something, mm-hmm. then more reporting comes out, and that reporting was showing that there were harms that could happen. And folks are saying, what the hell's going on? I thought mm-hmm. psilocybin was safe mm-hmm. as milk, and of course, it's not. so that was like a little bit of a come to Jesus moment, and I think that it has tamped down some of the really overt optimism, and maybe we're swinging the other direction a little bit, but I'm hoping that eventually the public will find a kind of realistic middle point that says, great promise, but things take time to be determined safe in the general public. I don't think that process is wrong. I actually think it's natural and good. But for those who jumped into spending thousands of dollars on certificates as psychedelic guides, and there may be finding out that the amount of clients that are out there are kind of limited as people start to say, well, maybe this isn't something that's I can safely jump into right now. You know, and there's also been a kind of conversion, I would say, from a convention attitude toward sharing information about psychedelics, where, like at the festival, at the Telluride Mushroom Festival, we share information. Whereas now it's becoming a little more like a convention, less like a conference, I'm sorry, and more like a convention, where you're seeing more people who are selling tinctures and chocolates and all kinds of products. And that is a evolution that is maybe a little ahead of the science. Some people would say a lot ahead of the science. But I see it as a kind of natural ebb and flow in search of that place, that in search of a balance, right? A balanced view.
Okay. So this is sort of, your answer is sort of a segue into my next question, which is specifically about your book, Have a Good Trip, which I mentioned was published October 2024. You have faced some challenges in promoting that book, ones that fall out of the aforementioned socio-political environment. Are you comfortable discussing the whys of that? Having read the book, I know how valuable your information is.
Yeah. In fact, this is a book that is, look, it's going into paperback, so it's selling, but it's really selling slowly and by word of mouth because, you know, it's really well-researched. It's as accurate as I could possibly be, and it's really well notated, so people can check stuff, they can follow up. You know, as you said in the intro, it's really a resource. It is not a guide. Nonetheless, there has, from the mainstream media, even my own newspaper, the Wall Street Journal, that I write for, there's been no reviews, and there's been a real kind of hands-off. Now, I can imagine there's issues of liability because if somebody treats the book like a guide, which would be hard to do because I over and over again say, I'm not telling you how to do this. I'm telling you what people do and what the end results are, you know, and what the, you know, sort of statistics are to a degree based on both science and surveys and anecdotal synthesis of anecdotal reporting. But I honestly think it's liability. And I also think that our kind of sassy naming of the book, Have a Good Trip, probably didn't do us that well, because it sounds a little bit more flip than the content really is. But, you know, in marketing a book, you always make decisions. But there's two aspects to putting out a book, as you know. One is editorial and one is marketing. And it's a constant battle. Editorial is always trying to defend content, and marketing is trying to get the book out there. And sometimes there's a big space between the two interpretations of what the book is. But you do your best to bring the two together. And so I think that maybe the title is a little bit like, freak people out, you know, in the mainstream who are afraid that it's a guide, and then the last thing they want to do is have somebody sue them because, you know, they said Have a Good Trip is a really good book and they went off and did something silly that I would never recommend. In fact, I don't recommend anything. I recommend you inform yourself. There's a lot of things you can learn and it's good to know it. That's my fear. I mean, look, as a writer, at first it was like, the book sucks, everybody hates it, that's why it's not getting reviewed. But that's not what I'm hearing back from people at all. And in fact, I'm constantly, the mycological community has embraced this book. And I am constantly doing talks for people, and they are full. So, you know, it's this weird place to be in, but to be honest with you, Susan, the mycological world has always been kind of fringe. So I'm not in totally unknown territory.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks for that, explaining that, which explains a lot of things about how the world views mushrooms specifically specifically also psychedelics. It's challenging. Okay, now let's get a little personal. You are a renowned mushroom expert. We've established that over and over. Also a general science and nature writer, including hot topics like the microbiome. You're also a food writer. What in your background triggered those interests, and they're quite disparate, and how did you create a career out of those related yet wide-ranging subjects?
Well, you know, they're not disparate. It depends on the lens you look through. So all my books utilize the same, and I have 9 books out there, and they all utilize the same kind of thinking, which is very precise, but with evocative writing. Precise, you need the same kind of brain to synthesize a bunch of scientific papers as you do to write a recipe, because that recipe has to be reproducible by anybody as long as they follow it. And so that that kind of demanding precision is something that is my personal sort of challenge. It's the thing, it's the puzzle that I love to solve. And then evocative writing, I'm a writer's writer. I, you know, bring a lot of metaphor and connections to other things that I know about into my writing, and I bring people into my writing and scenarios, everything that all the stuff a writer depends on, all the senses I try to bring to my writing, even though I'm writing about science or recipes. So they're very similar. So they're similar from the point of view of a writer. From the point of view, from the topic point of view, they actually follow a chain of interests. And as I said before, curiosity, I think, for me, curiosity is density, is destiny. I follow a topic, one thing leads to another. My curiosity is always dragging me along to try to understand something new. So for me, my interest in food, I was particularly interested in 2 things that I wrote about when there used to be food magazines. I wrote about wild foods and foraging. That's how I got into mushrooms. And I wrote about preserving, which is really kitchen microbiology. I was fascinated with the idea that so much could happen in the jar based on stuff I couldn't see. And I was, you know, believe it or not, a master canner. Sounds really important, but it's really no more complicated than getting your driver's license. But the science of it was so interesting that I could control something I couldn't see. I knew it was there. I could see how it affected food, and it fascinated me. So those 2 interests have been consistent in my work. It's why I got into microbiology through mycology, but also through food preservation. Both things interested me. I guess ultimately, I'm very fascinated. I'm very excited to try to explain, to find an answer to the best of my ability, and to try to explain the phenomena that change our world, our lives, our gut, our environments, but that can't be seen. That is the underlying fascination for me. I know that bacteria and fungi are floating. I know I'm breathing them in right now. I know they're everywhere. And I just want to know, how do they live? What are they doing? What are they doing to me? How does their life cycle intersect, you know, with mine? Because the mystery of powerful life movements or powerful life forces that exist that I can't see. I mean, to me, it's, all right, I'm going to get weird here, but to me, it's a little bit like spirituality. And in fact, my son once said to me, you know, kind of makes more sense that God wouldn't be one big thing, but actually billions and billions of microscopic things.
Okay, wonderful. Well, on that note, I am going to say, bid you a fond farewell. This has been Susan Vibrock, Telluride Inside and Out, speaking once again with Eugenia Bone, who literally is everywhere you want to be at the Telluride Mushroom Festival, which begins the pre-fest events on August 13th and ends on Sunday, August 17th. Eugenia, looking forward to seeing you again.
Me too. See you at the festival.
Yep. Bye.